This coming Shabbos, we're going to have the honor and privilege of reading Parsha Shlach. Parsha Shlach begins, of course, with the idea of Shlach Lecha and Hashem, which Rashi notes that the connection between this section of the Meraglim and the one previously is the fact that the Meraglim saw what happened when Miriam told Lashon Hara and didn't learn from her punishment. And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz Hatzal explained that the one who watches an episode needs to properly assess cause and effect for himself or herself on a personal level. The late great Reb Nosson Tzvi Finkelzatzal, the famous Mirror Shiva, added that the reason why we often fail to do that is because of our own personal component or our own isms that interfere with our vision. The Meraglim didn't see that. They wanted to remain in charge of the people, which blocked their ability to properly assess the situation. And so instead, they figured out that there must be something else going on. And so as a result, their engagement in Lashon Hara was apparent. And when they saw certain episodes happening in the news, they saw the clusters of grapes, they saw the Yoshev HaAretz, who were all making funerals. Instead of seeing this as an opportunity for them to say, Alo Nala, they didn't notice their own personal ism that held them back. And this, as a result, they came back and offered a Diba Ra. We're told also that the land, they said, was Eretz Ocheles Yoshvahi. And as the Meraglim traveled through Eretz Yisrael, they saw many cities in tumult over the recent death of their leaders. And the Meraglim concluded that with so many Kanani officials dying, the land must be unsafe, and it must be Ocheles Yoshvah. So the Stipler Zatzal notes that if the death of officials was in fact a routine event in Canaan, then the funerals the Meraglim saw would not have served to distract the people. Rather, they would have just been ordinary. So if so, why didn't the Meraglim realize that the abundant funerals were in fact unusual, not the norm? And so the Stipler explains that someone who's in a negative state of mind will see and do as such. Just as someone who's wearing dirty glasses will see everything as soiled, so too a person's attitude colors his outlook and determines his point of view. And since the Meraglim viewed Eretz Yisrael with suspicion, they understood that the numerous deaths they witnessed to reflect negatively on the land. And the negative outlook on Eretz Yisrael distorted the reality of Hashem's intervention and acts of kindness. Conversely as well, being in a positive state of mind sometimes leads us to see reality in a more favorable light. The unprecedented circumstances of today leave us with various challenges, and yet a positive state of mind enables one to embrace good and carry on. But of course, even there, we have a responsibility to make sure that we don't just walk around Pollyannish and lose the focus there within. A person needs to have an ideal and a real in life in order for him or her to be able to function. We're told, V'anihi b'einenu kachagavim v'chein ha'inu b'eineihem, that the Meraglim also said we were like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and that's the way we were perceived. And the Baal HaTurim quotes a Medrash that when the Meraglim arrived in Eretz Yisrael, they saw a giant eating a giant pomegranate and then threw his shell on the ground. And all 12 Meraglim took shelter inside that shell. And that's why they felt like grasshoppers. So Rabbi Lam, Zechron Levracha, interprets this Medrash to be saying that the Meraglim had the gullish Jew mentality, who were willing to accept an empty hollow shell as long as it was used by the non-Jews. And they were willing to lower themselves to feel like grasshoppers, simply because the surrounding culture wanted them to feel that way. And we have to have a responsibility not to give in to the outside culture, not to say that we're lower. It's sort of the understanding I once heard from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who turned to us in the middle of a Chumash once and thundered in the Beis Medrash, "If you think you are a grasshopper, then you are a grasshopper." What a very important lesson in life. So, Yoshua and Kaleb didn't take to this very well. They were very upset with the situation, and they tried to convince the people otherwise. And they said to them, "I don't think you guys understand. Sar Tzilam Me'aleim, their tail, their shadow, has been removed from them." And in explaining the intent of Yoshua and Kaleb here, Rav Yosef Carmel explained that the root roots that contain the root part, tzel, represent the form in a matter which is seen, and it's similar to their shadows have been removed, which means that the images of their faces were changed due to fear. Ibn Ezra adds that if a warrior doesn't have a shield to protect him and be a shadow for him, so his heart gets full of fear. And here also Rav Carmel says, the Kanani nations were so fearful of Bnei Yisrael's expected arrival that they were ready to throw away their weapons and run for their lives. Sar Tzilam, their tzel, their shields have already been taken to them, taken away. But they didn't listen, and Bnei Yisrael cried that night. And Hashem promised them, "You guys are going to suffer. You're going to move around for 40 years." So immediately, a group rises and declares, "Hinenu ve'alinu, here we are. We're going to go up." And this group, the Mapilim, decided to go to Eretz Yisrael, and then they're subsequently killed. But what did they do that was wrong? Wasn't their act the greatest form of tshuva? The fact that they were expressing a true desire for Eretz Yisrael? So Rav Avigdor Nebenzahl Shalita suggested that what they did was an extension of their original sin. The original sin was not believing that they could conquer Eretz Yisrael. The tshuva that they did was not that they had the physical means to conquer, but that Hashem was going to help them conquer. And so they, like the Meraglim, took Hashem's role out of the equation, and so therefore they continued to sin, and that sin continued to remain with them. After the story here, we learn a number of mitzvos. We learn the mitzvah of Yayin LaNesach, and the Nesachim, and we also learn Reishis Ariso Seichem Chala Tarimu Truma, the idea of Hafrashas Chala. And Rav Shachter Shalita pointed out that there's a disagreement between the Mechaber and the Ramah as to the proper bracha that one makes upon separating Chala. And the Shulchan Aruch notes that the proper bracha is ala hafrashas truma, while the Ramah notes that it's lahafresh chalam and ha'isa. So Rav Shachter quoted the Vilna Gaon, who noted that the difference seems to be based on the idea of whether brachos need to be made in biblical Hebrew or not. And so, citing the Avud Raham, who notes that the biblical chala refers only to raw dough, the Mechaber prefers the bracha of truma, which would include both baked and raw chala. And Rav Shachter notes that the Netziv disagrees and maintains that brachos don't need to be made in the original biblical Hebrew. And so therefore, when we make a bracha, we can say, Lahavrish chala min ha'isa. We're also told, Reisem osos chartem is komitzvos Hashem, that when a person looks at the tzitzis, he'll remember all the mitzvos of Hashem. And the Gemara Menachos says that Tchelus was chosen because its color is similar to the sea, which is similar to the sky, which is similar to the Kisei HaKavod. But why don't we simply say that Tchelus is similar to the Kisei HaKavod? And so Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, suggests that this is to teach us that if we want to get to the Kisei HaKavod, we have to do so incrementally. We can't just jump to the top level. That we have a responsibility to remember that the middle pieces are there, and also sometimes to understand that middle steps count. And that's also an exciting and important message. Finally, in the Haftorah this week, we're going to read about the second time Meraglim was sent, and that was in the time of Yehoshua. And we're told that Yehoshua's two meraglim were hidden by Rachav Azona, and she vatoridem b'chevel ba'arachalon, she lowered them down by rope through the window. And the Alkat Shimoni notes that when Yirmiyahu HaNavi was being lifted out of the pit, and the rope was cutting into his arms, he davened to Hashem for some relief from the pains of the ropes cutting into him. But Hashem told him that Rachav had let the meraglim out with a coarse rope instead of a ladder, and it was good enough. So to hear, it should be good enough for her descendant, for Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Rav Pam Zecher Tzadik Livracha added that we learn a very important lesson from this episode. What we learn from here is something very special, that when one does a chesed for someone else, that chesed needs to be performed in the best way possible for the recipient, not in the way that we would benefit from it. And that's also a critical message, and one that's worthy of messaging for us as we head into our periods of life where we sometimes think to ourselves, well, this is what I'm doing because it's more convenient for me. That's a chesed. Our chesedim have to be seen and realize that the way we do them, they often have long-term and far-reaching aspects. Well, I want to wish everybody a wonderful, terrific Shabbos, and Be'ezus Hashem, we'll see each other very soon. Shabbat Shalom to all.